Hey, I'm your host, Scott Herf. Today, I had the honor of sitting down with Jay Nathan, a customer success veteran and expert. He's the chief customer officer at HireLogic and the co-founder of the Gain, Grow, Retain customer success leadership community. Now, this is one of the premier customer success communities out there. It's 12,000 members, tens of thousands of weekly readers. Check it out if you can, gaingrowretain.com. In this episode, you're going to learn how to lead and scale SaaS customer success teams. And that's really important to do it efficiently because this is a world where there's no more free money. So I also want you to be ready. You're going to get to hear a little bit of breaking news on this one. So please enjoy. What's up, Jay? Good to see you, man. I figured we'd start by just chatting a little bit about what you're working on now and what you're into.
Yeah, sounds good. Good to see you, Scott. As you mentioned in the intro, I am the chief customer officer and actually have a slightly modified role at HireLogic too, where I'm the general manager of one of our business units. And so my days right now are occupied with sort of pathfinding on our go-to-market strategy. We're working really hard on a partner strategy at HireLogic for the products that my team sells. Working real hard on that. That's the ecosystem play is so important these days. And so we're putting a lot of energy into it. Other than that, just, you know, keeping customers and retaining them. I also do a lot of writing. So got a couple of projects there I'm working on as well.
Which is impressive. I mean, I find it writing to be clarifying, but finding the time for that, carving that out, you know, it's like getting your reps in or eating your broccoli sometimes. But then once you do it, you feel amazing, right?
Yeah. You know, there's no such thing as an overnight success, right? Most people that appear successful out of nowhere have been diligently working away at things for years sometimes. And writing is just one of those things for me that, to your point, it does help clarify my thinking, whether it's thinking about things that are happening in my personal life or things that I'm trying to accomplish from a business perspective. And I think that has been one unexpected benefit of spending so much time writing is that it's just clarified my thinking so much. And it's more of a habit than anything to just write every single day.
I love that. I mean, and I like how you format it, distribute it, distill it down because it's so consumable, but so you can tell it's just been refined, right? It's that the phenomenon of the rock tumbler Steve Jobs used to talk about, where you've got all these ideas working together in this. I'm going to butcher the metaphor, but you know, everything seems just so punchy and refined. And I always come away after reading one of your posts like, oh, okay, I'm going to pause and think on that. So I appreciate you putting that out into the world. And then you've got Gain, Grow, Retain, right? Your huge community of CS professionals.
Yeah. So yeah, great call out. We launched a community called Gain, Grow, Retain. We call it GGR for short because it's a little bit of a mouthful, but we launched it back in, we started a podcast back in 2019 and, you know, of course, we had a blog and everything. I had a consulting firm back then, and we were using this community strategy and the blog and the podcast, much like we use it here at Churnkey, right? You use it to help, you know, educate the market, draw attention to the brand. We were doing the same thing for the consulting firm. We worked with B2B tech companies on their customer success strategies. We were a management consulting firm, basically, is what we were. But we built this community, and during the pandemic, it just exploded. People wanted to talk to each other. They wanted to figure out, okay, we're seeing this at our company. Are you seeing the same thing? Yeah. And what are you going to do about it? And how's it going to work? And we just sort of caught lightning in a bottle back in like early 2020 when the pandemic started. We started it, actually, the community was really started with a weekly Zoom call. We called it CS Leadership Office Hours.
Wow.
And first week we had 50 people. The next week we had 75. Then we had 125. And it just kept growing and growing and growing. And people started to pull from us. They said, hey, if like we're getting together every week, we'd love to be able to chat in between these calls as well and make personal connections and have content and, you know, be able to, you know. So we built an online community. We now have live events that are part of that. We still run those office hours calls, which are really important to create person-to-person connections because that's really what community is, right? It's all about connecting people and knowledge and ideas. And so it turns out to have been one of the more fun professional things that I've done in my life. And it was almost completely serendipitous. Like, we did not set out to build a community of 12,000 people. We just didn't.
It just happened.
And our mantra from the start was, let's just give as much value as we can. Just give. And over time, it's come back, you know, tenfold to us. But we just continue with that mantra today. How do we keep giving our community members more value?
Yeah, it's fun to see that DNA still carry through with the office hours. I mean, that schedule was incredibly robust, and that's tough to pull off. You know, and it's really impressive, especially with that scale of people.
Yeah, we had to learn how to facilitate big Zoom calls. That was, yeah. We were using Zoom, and luckily Zoom was available to us in 2020. And so, yeah, it was a new skill set we had to learn to be able to facilitate that. But lots more stories we can share from GGR, you know, as we continue to chat.
Right on. GainGrowRetain.com. It's good stuff. You've been thinking deeply about SaaS companies and customer relationships for a long time. And what we're seeing now, and you know, we're feeling this at Turnkey too, where we're market correction and, you know, in search of efficiency and the realization that cheap money and spending your way out of problems is no longer the reality. And I want to get your perspective on, you know, what needs to happen within SaaS companies to maintain deep customer relationships while being efficient. Cause you know, that's the root of all SaaS success, really.
Yeah. Well said. I often say that SaaS companies are customer success machines, right? You have to make your customers successful if you want to win as a business. It's just, there's no separating the two because the cost of acquisition is so high for customers. And if they only stay for a year or 18 months or 24 months, you're probably going to be upside down as you continue to grow. I think if you look at the past 10 or 15 years in the SaaS ecosystem, as you pointed out, there's been a ton of money that's been pumped into here. And you know, a lot of the folks that institutionally invest in companies like Turnkey and HireLogic, you know, they know on the surface level that you need to have a customer success team, right? Everybody should just have that. And we want you to go scale up sales and marketing, so you need to go hire some more BDRs. You need to go hire salespeople. But there's a lot of nuance in each of these businesses. And what I've found is that even customer success teams have sort of just thrown a lot of spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks, and it's not been very efficient. Customer success, as it's sort of grown and evolved over the past 10 or 15 years, has really come from a place of very high touch. So think like high touch account management, calls with your customers every week. That's one thing. If you've got big enterprise customers, you have to do that, right? You can't avoid that. But there's a lot of companies out there, especially a lot of the types of companies that Turnkey serves, that serves hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of very small businesses. So what does customer success look like there? It's completely different, but some of the same technologies and techniques that you use to engage large audiences also work in enterprise. Because guess what? Enterprise companies don't necessarily want to be on the phone talking to you every day because they use 20 other products just like yours, right?
Right.
So they need to know it's working. They need to know that if they have a problem, they can submit an issue to the company through the support channel, and it's going to get resolved correctly and quickly. And then they want strategic guidance. Like, what do my peers look like? Am I performing as well as they are, or do I need to be doing things differently? So when we think about scaling customer success, we think about content, the best practices, the webinars, the office hours, all the kind of stuff we did for GGR. We think about the same kind of techniques for scaling and making that customer success function more efficient, because it really is all about enablement and the product, enablement of the best practices and processes. And then, you know, making sure that customers are adopting and getting the usage out of the product that they need to prove its value.
It's really interesting you connecting growing GGR in a way that you would scale a customer success team or operations. It's really interesting comparison. Kind of like turning the light bulb on in my head right now. But I think it's interesting that customer success has this high touch enterprise-y reputation. And it's one of the more interesting dynamics about the topic, in my opinion, because, you know, I don't know why it's gotten that reputation of being, you know, sloggy and expensive, and I got to get on a call again with this guy, right?
Yeah, because it has been.
Yeah.
It has been sloggy and expensive and inefficient, in my opinion. So I think you're spot on.
Yeah. And that segues, when we spoke earlier, you said something that I loved, where when you're advising companies, your question is, well, how can I convince you to not create a customer success team? That's what you do. This is your role. This is what you love to do. But, you know, hearing you say that, I want to know, like, what would you do instead? Why is this? What does that mean? Right?
Yeah. I had a call with a friend of mine from the community a couple of weeks ago, and he's in a new role. Company just got a big funding round. You know, it's a Series C round of funding, big one, like a nine-figure kind of deal. And he's like, yeah, I got brought in to build out the customer success function. And I asked him a bunch of questions. And, you know, first question is like, what is your gross retention rate? Well, it's above 95%. That's fantastic. That's world class, right? Like, so where's the problem? Like, what problem are you solving? And it's CSM teams, because that's sort of the thing, right? In customer success, you often think about a team of CSMs, but that's a blunt force instrument, right? A CSM team is a high cost blunt force instrument that's only going to give you so much reach across your customer base because it's so high touch. So when I think about customer success, I think about it as that's the outcome that we're trying to drive. It's not renewals. It's not upselling. It's not advocacy. It's not even adoption. It's like, is the customer getting what they thought they were buying, right? Are they getting that result and that outcome? Now, how we help the customer get that is what we call customer success is like a team or a function. It could be CSM. CSMs are a customer success channel or a channel of engaging with your customers. But there's other things you can do too. And it comes back to this community concept. Every company, I think, should have an online community. Of course, I think that because that's the product my company sells. But it's a way of letting customers connect with one another, right? And learn from one another because oftentimes customers have better insights because they sit in the exact same role as your other customers versus you. Your CSMs don't necessarily have that direct hands-on, been in the seat experience. Right. So communities are really important for helping drive just the overall feeling that I'm part of something bigger, right? Like, yes, I'm buying a product from Turnkey or from HireLogic, but I'm actually part of their ecosystem too. And they have tons of resources and people for me to network with so I can become better at my job and better at using their products. So
that's powerful.
That's one thing. When I think about, you know, the statement that I made to you about I'm going to convince you not to hire a CSM team, but the question that I asked my buddy, you know, when he described what he was looking at doing is, okay, you have the other thing he shared with me is that there's an account management team who's doing a lot of the quote unquote customer success functions. Like they're meeting with customers, they're handling escalations, they're doing the value and ROI report outs with the customer, the kind of thing, the proactive engagement you'd expect from a CSM team.
Yeah.
My question is, well, okay, if you look across that team, it sounds like they're already doing a lot of this work, but what's one thing that they're doing? And if you could take that one task off of their plates across the whole team, what would that look like? And could you specialize a role to just go do that one thing? So we talked about billing inquiries, right? They handle all the billing inquiries. Well, why not centralize that in one person who can just go handle that? Maybe they're part of the finance team. Maybe they're part of the renewal team. So to me, it's all about looking at what's working today. How do you leverage that without creating something brand new if you don't already have it? Like if you don't already have a CSM team, why create it? But do start layering in things that give you leverage and scale on what is already working. So maybe it's billing inquiries. Maybe it's a support team, or maybe it's an onboarding function that just specializes in that onboarding, that new customer implementation motion that has to be done well and done right every single time without fail. Right. And so I think of the world, you know, as you grow a SaaS company, as you scale your customer success practice, or I think about the world in terms of creating specialist roles that handle very specific moments in the customer journey along the way.
That's powerful. I mean, and I love to jump into that. I love process and examples of the practicalities of things. And what would you say are the top few practical, achievable examples of scaling customer success? So you mentioned one, a few there, but what are some like must-haves in your experience?
You know, early on in a company's stage when you're at the seed round or maybe even your A round of funding, you may just have a team of what people might refer to today as like a full stack CSM. Like it's a person who handles the support requests. If a renewal is coming up, they might have a conversation with the customer. They're doing it all. They're a quote unquote jack or Jill of all trades, right? Oftentimes the first functional roles that need to be scaled inside of a SaaS company are going to be your support team, your support function, right? Because it's very specific. When a customer reaches out to you, you want to be able to respond to them as quickly as possible and solve that issue as fast as possible. The other one, like I mentioned, is onboarding or implementation, however you look at that, but it's getting your new users off the ground. And if you have enough new users coming in or new customers coming in, onboarding, it's a little bit like support, right? When a new customer comes on board, you have to react to that. You have to go do the work to get them implemented. Now, you know, in a product-led growth model, your product may guide them through that process.
Yeah.
But, you know, for anything else, like onboarding is super critical in SaaS, right? And so it should be specialized pretty early in my estimation.
Right, because the customer's cleared time in their schedule. Maybe they've gotten engineers, whoever on board, we're teed up, ready to go. The button's not working, you know, or whatever, right?
Right. I need an answer now, right? Because I'm right. trying to use a product, but it's not, now it's not doing what it's supposed to do. So that's right. got to be lightning fast. And there's got to be a deep connection with the engineering function for that type of issue, right? So we can get it resolved quickly. Once a company gets, you know, their first tranche of customers through the initial term of their agreements with you, you know, some companies sign customers up on a monthly recurring basis and it's, you can turn an offer on anytime. Right. In a lot of enterprise SaaS, you know, B2B, you're actually signing annual agreements for things, maybe a 1, 2, or 3 year contract. But when those contracts start coming up for renewal, you need to be able to reliably renew those contracts. And to do that, you know, one of the roles that I've had a lot of success creating in my career is a renewal manager role, which basically takes all the commercial negotiation of a renewal off the plate of a CSM or off the plate of a sales team who needs to be, you know, ideally booking new business, new logo bookings. And it centralizes it, and you can have one or two people be really, really good at renewal price increases, you know, annually, and, you know, maybe a little bit of expansion there as well. And so that, at least in my experience, is much better done centralized into a specialist kind of role. And there are a number of other roles like that. When you think about developing content in webinars for your customers, like who does that, right? The run-of-the-mill CSM doesn't have experience. That looks more like a marketing kind of role when you think right. about the tools and the process of facilitating a one-to-many engagement with a customer, whether it's around the product roadmap in a webinar, or it's, you know, around a certain topic that we're trying to educate our customers on in the product. So there's all kinds of opportunities for specialization as you grow, right? And you have to right. sort of think through it as you grow.
In that example, would the customer success role be leading that webinar, or would they be feeding marketing the content for that? Or maybe both?
Maybe both.
Yeah.
It's really a matter of who's organizing that program. Because it's back to the skill set thing. Traditionally, the CSM skill set is a relationship manager, a product expert, a coach, consultant. So when I think about, they're going to get a lot of stories that come out of their interactions with customers, and they're going to be able to identify, okay, this customer is, they're really doing things better than anybody else, and we should put them in the spotlight. So they can be a really valuable source of recruiting people to participate in these things, both from as a participant and as a leader. And then they can also be a valuable source of content because they're ears to the ground constantly and they're getting great feedback. Now, what we have to train CSMs to do is be attuned to what they're hearing and know that it's the role they play is more than just the conversations they had with those customers that day.
Totally.
Right? Yes, that's important, but it's also important for you to bring those insights back to the business so we can load up our scaled programs with great content, great ideas, and great people that they're coming across in their day-to-day work with them.
Yeah, that's one thing we're trying to work on at Churnkey, where both to recognize patterns and to recognize, you know, new developments, but also not to be, you know, what's the phenomenon where a doctor learns about some disease and then they diagnose that disease, you know, every time they're after for a little while. So, you know, not to get too stuck in the mud on certain feedback on certain days, right? So it's a very human problem, but
it really is.
I'd rather have that than being caught by surprise with cancellations or negative feedback or whatever, right?
100%.
Who are some customer or what companies do you admire that are customer centric and that are doing really innovative things with customer success?
Great question. So, I have a little bit of recency bias on this too. You were mentioning there with the doctors.
Yeah.
I've been reading Invent and Wonder by Jeff Bezos. And basically Invent and Wonder is the collective writings of Jeff Bezos. So it's really just a collection of his shareholder letters and other, you know, writings on certain topics that he's done over the years. And Amazon probably doesn't even have a customer success team, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they may somewhere across their vast empire, they probably have a CS team somewhere. But what I love about Amazon and why I consider them one of the most customer-centric companies in the world is because their innovation is based on customer centricity. They built, you know, Amazon Marketplace to show third-party seller products next to products that they sell themselves, right?
Right.
And many people, including many members of their board, were like, "You are crazy. What are you doing? Why would you do that? You cannibalize your own sales." Because they know that It's not about maximizing the value of any single transaction. It's about maximizing the lifetime value of that customer and having them. I mean, Scott, how many things have you ordered off of Amazon in your life? I couldn't even tell you at this point.
Yeah, it's probably embarrassing for me to tell you over the past 15 years. It's nuts.
Exactly. Right. Now we go back there because we know we've got the best selection. Right. You know, another thing, when they made the decision to allow reviews of products on the site, people were like, why would you do that? What if they give negative reviews? Well, it's all about the customer. So the customer is going to be better educated. They're going to trust us and they're going to come back and buy more. And, you know, you see that flywheel. He calls it a flywheel of growth a lot in how they've built that business. And it just permeates through every part of it. Amazon Web Services, Marketplace, Prime, those are all very customer-centric ideas that they knew were going to be costly when they launched them, but they had faith that they were going to feed that flywheel. And the, you know, the sum of the lifetime value of transactions was going to far outweigh any single transaction that they could do with their customers. So Amazon right now is just my favorite. And I love reading about them and learning more about their culture of innovation for customers.
I was actually working in e-commerce when they launched the third-party marketplace in Raleigh, actually, your neck of the woods.
Yeah.
Back in like 07, people were calling them crazy. You're competing against yourself. But it was enabled by this other innovation they had, which seems obvious at the time or now, but it wasn't at the time, where, you know, their main competition was eBay. And if you search for, say, I don't know, I'm looking at my kid's Lego set. So search for a Star Wars Lego set, you get different listing pages of the same product. Well, an example of them being customer centric was, well, that product should have one page, you know, and a single, what they call, you know, the ASIN. And then, you know, all these listings roll up under that page. And it's just a better search shopping experience for everyone. Enables reviews and all that stuff. So eBay's never recovered from that.
No. Yeah. I mean, they're still doing okay, right? But they're a distant second. And, you know, the cool thing about the way that works culturally at Amazon is they tried an auction site too, I believe.
They did. Yeah.
With eBay. And it ended up failing. And they said, all right, let's move on to the next thing. So they're not afraid to take chances on behalf of their customers to find. It's like the overnight success thing, right? Marketplace wasn't a success overnight. They had two or three failed tries at it before they hit on what the right idea was with the product pages that you mentioned and everything. So
yeah. And many companies would have just ditched it after the first one.
Right? Oh yeah, of course. Or they would have tried one of the tactics. They would have tried to copy one of the tactics that they saw their competitors doing that worked.
Yep.
In isolation of having the whole culture of innovation, of driving prices down, of making selection bigger, of making information more democratized. Like, that's a cultural thing. And if you do any one of those things in isolation, you know, another very customer-centric company is Southwest Airlines. But they start by being very clear about who they are and who they are not. They'll tell you, like, if you want a first-class seat on an airplane, like, don't fly Southwest because we're not doing that. They know who their customer is and they serve them relentlessly. So other airlines have tried to copy, you know, the cultural, the fun aspect of what Southwest does, and they've tried to, you know, pare back some of the benefits, but they haven't adopted the entire mindset, the entire culture that Southwest Airlines does. So all they're doing is adding more cost and less revenue to their books, right? And they're not actually winning.
Yeah.
Culturally.
Not a winning formula. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Love it. Well, I want to shift back to you and the work you're doing real quick. And we got a little breaking news here. You're joining Turnkey's board of advisors, which is something we're all extremely excited about. And we're finally ready to lay out to the world. We've been, you know, chomping at the bit to tell people about this. You know, we're huge fans of your work and your thinking and just admire how you know, reinforce the importance of being customer centric. It's one of our values, but also, you know, we just discussed the practical realities of actually doing that. It's not just some platitude or whatnot. So yeah, we're crazy excited. Breaking news here, guys.
Yeah. Very exciting. And, you know, it's almost like serendipity in a lot of ways, because half your team is based here in Charleston, which, you know, how many software companies are actually based here?
Oh, I know.
Not that many. And then to have a software company, you know, with half of its team in Charleston focused on essentially what is a subset of customer success is just super exciting. So I'm just happy that the network, the the skill set, the exposure that I've had over the past 20 years just happens to be, it's, it happens to line up perfectly with what y'all are doing. And I could
really does
about it. So, you know, when I looked at Chernke, I've known Baird for a lot of years. Actually, I used to work with his wife at a former company that we were both at. And here's some good advice maybe for your listeners. At least I think it's good advice. When you're evaluating a company, whether it's to invest in or join as an employee or become an executive of or join the advisory board of, there are three things to look for. Number one is, are you in a good market? You really want to be, when you choose a company to do anything with, you want to be on top of a wave, not under it, as I say. And I mean, just look at the world of subscriptions, right? It is exploding right now. Not only can you buy software on subscription, which is, you know, one of the earlier companies to take advantage of this, but I mean, look at Costco, right? I'm a member at Costco. I can get my hair cut and my car wash. I can buy that on subscription now. There's so many. I heard the other day that Taco Bell was trying out a subscription service. Did you know that?
Sign me up. Taco's Crunchwrap Supreme.
Yeah. TAAS. so I don't know if that'll stick or not, but it's clear that Chernke was on a market wave right now. It's found the right wave. So excited about that. Number two thing I look for is the product. Is the product good? Because if the product sucks, it's going to be a slog. And I've been in situations where, you know, the product was not in a good spot. We had to really work at it to get it into that spot. But just looking at the product and how clean and tight it is, obviously it's only been born over the past few years. So it's on the latest and greatest technologies, which makes it lightning fast for us to iterate on it. Customers, it's performant, it stands up to, you know, the task. So the product is excellent. And by the way, even the analytics capabilities of what Chernke can do and the visibility that it gets. One of the things that I love as a customer success leader is working with a product where you can very visibly see the outcome of using it, right? And luckily, Chernke deals with an area of the customer subscription model where you can actually literally give day by day an ROI score. You know how you're doing, right? That's awesome. Not all software companies have that luxury. And then the third thing I look for is a team. Is the team good? And this team is small and mighty. Y'all have been together through multiple startups and had great exits and are committed to this thing as a group. And it's just infectious. And so I'm super honored and excited just to be a small part of it.
You're making me blush, man. it's good to step back and you know, take the wins and think through the success and how we've gotten here. And, you know, but we're looking forward to the next phase. You know, to your point, to adopt and change Mark Andreessen's quote, subscriptions are now eating the world and they're everywhere for better or for worse, but it's the reality. Subscriptions are an interesting thing, right? It's a relationship. It's an ongoing relationship. And in any relationship, there are tension points. And what we want to do is make sure that everybody who is subscribed to a product feels like they're seen, gets their needs met, and is done in a customer-centric, user-friendly way. Like, never any dark patterns, never any a billion emails if your payment doesn't go through once. You know, like we want to bring respect back to this relationship at scale all across the world. And, you know, even legislation doing that in places like New York, California, and then, you know, internationally, Europe and India have some really interesting laws around subscriptions. And because that respect hasn't been present, it's been abused. That relationship has been abused. So that's a big focus for us. And especially too, on the data side, you mentioned, you know, we respect our customers too, to show them how good we're doing. We're not going to hide that. If we're not doing a good job, then we're all going to know about it and we can fix it. So that goes many, many layers deep. So yeah, you're going to help us with the next phase. It's been 2.5 years kind of figuring out who we are and then off to the races for the next 3 to 10, right?
Yeah, it's exciting. You have there's a lot of headroom for what Chernke is doing. And so just excited to be a part of it.
Love it. Love it. Well, let's keep talking about you. I want to talk about, just close out with a few questions. And I just want to understand your love of customer success and what drew you in and what keeps you interested there. And this is a little selfish on my part too, because I like understanding how people continuously stay in a single space and learn from it, enrich it and all that.
I grew up working for my parents when I was young. They were entrepreneurs. They had retail stores in, you know, at the time it was shopping malls. You don't see many of those anymore.
Yeah.
I learned a few things from them. You know, one is you just got to show up every day. You got to work. The other thing I learned from them is that the customer isn't always right, but they believe their perspective is always right. And you have to be empathetic to that. And so I credit working in their businesses and watching my mom and how she served our customers back then. It sort of embodied that and it stuck with me. And then the third piece is quality. My mom used to, she used to do artwork on these products that we would sell. She would actually hand draw this stuff.
Oh, cool.
And it was always, if there was the slightest mistake in any one of those things, she'd toss the product out and start over. Even if she was on the phone. And I was like, man, it's such hard work. But she believed in making sure that the customer got what they paid for and that it was valuable to them. And so I've carried those lessons with me over time. Actually, when I came out of college, I was a techie. I mean, I was a developer, an engineer. I was working for a utility company right out of school in 2001 because the economy sucked because the dot-com bubble had burst. This was just before 9/11 happened. So, you know, I learned what working inside of a big enterprise IT organization looks like. I knew I didn't want to do that forever, but it was good to get that exposure. And then I got into sort of these consulting type roles where I was working with customers on a consultative basis for years. And even in my first software company job that I had, I was still in that like pre-sales and consultative architect kind of role. And so it was very high touch, right? But, and again, back to the high touch customer success mindset, the work that I was doing hands-on then was very much like hands-on customer success is today. As I've learned more, as I've gotten involved with SaaS companies over the past 20 years, that's been where I just sort of fell in love with the business model, right? There's the metrics are fun to think about. They're fun to try to figure out how to impact what's going on, like Turnkey, right? Like if you have a higher gross cancellation rate than you want, like what's it going to look like when we put a product like Turnkey in the mix or when we add a CSM team to help drive account health preemptively? How do we make those bets and put our money in the right place? It's always intrigued me. And it's really more of just a pure business curiosity, I think, than anything. And then, you know, over the past 7 years, I've just done a lot of writing. Like I talked about at the top, right? As I've tried to assimilate or I've tried to process what I've learned, writing about it has just helped me grow my love for SaaS and B2B technology, B2C technology, and subscription business models more than anything else. So I don't know. I guess it's what I know. I've always been around this stuff, and that's what's kept me interested in it as long as I have been.
Now, that's powerful stuff. I didn't know about your parents and owning the shop. You said actual like malls, you know,
shopping malls and like strip malls. It was a, like a gift and candy kind of store. So it wasn't rocket science. It was just good, basic, straightforward business. And you serve the customers and you do it in a high quality way. And there's other stories I can share from that too, about, you know, how we tried to create quality products and for our customers, but and it worked. I mean, customers came back and you could really see the value of the repeat business. Even if you sell a product not on subscription, you still need repeat business. It's how business grows, word of mouth, repeat business. And so
totally,
it's all the same at the end of the day.
Are they, if you don't mind my asking, are the stores still around?
They are not. No, they are not. You know, as malls got put out of business, they sort of went by the wayside, and we never transitioned that business to be like an online kind of thing. I think we had that opportunity, but we didn't know how to do it back then because it was new, right? We had no clue how to really do it. And Shopify didn't exist, or we might have.
Yeah, you had to call up the gateway companies and, you know,
whatever,
all that stuff. Yeah, got it.
Buy $1 million worth of hardware to put in a data center, which we don't have to do any of that anymore, luckily.
Right. So in terms of reading, watching, listening, anything you've seen, read, listened to lately that's had an effect on you?
Yes. The thing that I am binging right now is a podcast called The Founders Podcast. Have you ever heard of this?
So good.
You like it? David Senra?
Yeah. He did one on Christopher Nolan recently, right?
Yeah. Wasn't Christopher Nolan was he a director?
Yeah. He did Oppenheimer and Batman Begins and all that.
Yeah. I haven't listened to that one all the way through yet, but so for people who don't know, Founders Podcast, David Senra, highly recommend it. He goes through, basically he reads biographies of great entrepreneurs. So all the usual suspects. Yeah. And then, of course, like Charlie Munger, Warren Buffett, Steve Jobs, of course, Larry Ellison, like all the big tech folks. But then he hits like one of his favorites is James Dyson, right? Have you listened to the Dyson episodes? That's the one that got me hooked to begin with.
Okay. I need to check that one out. I've always admired the guy, and I read his book back in the day, but I haven't seen that one. So it's so funny. I initially wrote the podcast off in a way, I don't know, because it just seemed like such a simple thing. And like, well, I can read the book myself. Why would I listen to it? But then it's just accelerating your intake on the topic, and he breaks it down so well.
Yeah. He also does a good job of, you know, I was listening to, he did an episode on Coco Chanel. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the other thing. Some of these fashion moguls, like you have no clue the grit that these people had
totally.
To go build their empires. And, but one of the things he'll do, like even if it's Coco Chanel, right? He'll say, you know, sort of walk through the story of their life and their business and what happened. And he'll be like, yeah, this is just like when Warren Buffett says this or when Jeff Bezos says this. And he sort of he does a really nice job of bringing multiple stories together every time he tells the story. And, you know, to your point, you can consume basically the equivalent of a book in an hour, as opposed to, I don't know, I'm a slow reader. It would take me, you know, 12 hours to read some of those books that he's summarizing for me in an hour.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a great point. And when he's starting to create, you know, the connections of basically his notes and database and his thinking, that's when it starts to really like, oh, okay. You know, like the lights come on in my head, and then you start making it less about the person and more about a process or a way of thinking, right?
Yeah.
That's cool.
One of the things he says in there, which I really like, is history doesn't repeat itself. Human nature does. And, you know, when you think about the things, the kind of determination and grit and beliefs that you have to get a company off the ground, it's like, this are just good reminders to have in my ear every day, right? Whether I'm building this business that I work in now, which is now currently my entrepreneurial pursuit, or anything else, or, you know, participating with Turnkey with you guys, you know, it's all about the inputs. So
I love it. I'm going to go fire up some episodes after this. All right. Closing question. What's the craziest thing you wish you could do right now, but can't?
Oh man. I don't know if it's crazy, but you know, one of my ambitions professionally is to run my own company again at some point. So I guess you could call me the CEO of my consulting firm, which we were a very small firm. So CEO is definitely an aggrandized kind of title for what we were doing. But that's the thing I really want to get back to is running a business in its entirety. And, you know, right now is not the time for that for me, but that's something that I'll do hopefully in the next 5 to 10 years again.
Awesome, man. Awesome. Well, hey, appreciate your time. Awesome catching up. And this is a great one. Appreciate it.
You too, man. Let's do more of these.
Definitely. See you. Don't miss out on future episodes. Get alerts for new drops at subscriptionheroes.co or follow us on your favorite podcast platform. Special thanks to Churnkey for sponsoring the show. Learn how to make customers happier while boosting revenue at churnkey.co. Your support for this show has been incredible so far, and let's keep the momentum going. We are all slaves to the algorithm. Ratings and reviews really do help. Please rate us 5 stars on your platform of choice. We'll be truly grateful. That's all for now. I'm Scott Hirsch, and this has been Subscription Heroes.